Strangers and Aliens, Episode 84.
Strangers and Aliens, Summer Movie Series.
Elysium. Welcome to Strangers and Aliens, a show where we talk about science fiction, fantasy, and spirituality, and Christianity, and talk about movies and books and comics and all that kind of thing. And this is part of our summer movie series where we talk about summer movies. We have one more summer movie to do. The next one we're going to do is Riddick. Not sure what I'm going to do because Dr. Jason and Steve have no plans to see Riddick, but I'll figure out something. In the meantime, I'm here to talk about Elysium, and I really want to talk about Elysium. The problem is Dr. Jace and Steve have not seen Elysium and have no plans to see Elysium, so I'm on my own. So I'm trying to decide because I really want to talk about this. I think I need to call in some people. Let's see. First, I think maybe I'll call my buddy from Sci-Fi Christian, Matt Anderson. Let me just dial him up and give him a call. Hello, Matt. Matt, are you there?
Hey, Ben.
Hey yeah. It's hey, Ben from Strangers and Aliens, the podcast.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Yeah, sorry. You caught me a little off guard there. I was just listening to one of my favorite podcasts, Welcome to Level 7, when you called there. So, hey, well, how's it going?
It's not going bad. I need to talk about Elysium, and I know you guys went to see this movie, and I want to talk about it with some people. So,
hey, I saw it with Daniel. We should get him on the line, too.
No way. Can we do a three-way call here? I'm not sure if I have the technology to do that, but maybe I'll give it a try. I'll just dial it up. I happen to know his number because of that podcast you're talking about. Welcome to Level 7. Let me give it a try. Just dialed up here. Oh, it's ringing. Hey, Daniel. Daniel, are you there?
And I knew you'd call back about that Burrito Supreme. It's remarkably small compared to my childhood.
What?
Hey, what? Is this not Taco Bell?
No. No. Oh. Listen, Daniel, I know you have a love for tacos. I didn't know extended to burritos. But
I'm just
Daniel, it's Matt. Upset. Daniel, this is Matt and Ben.
Yeah. Hey, it's Ben Avery from the Strangers and Aliens podcast and Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian.
I think I've heard of those shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm calling you, Daniel Butcher, from Welcome to Level 7.
Sorry, I got to calm down about the Burrito Supreme incident.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good.
Okay.
So why are you calling me?
I heard you went and saw the movie Elysium.
I did.
Yeah,
Matt.
Well, I want to... that's how I found out, because Matt, he's here. This is Matt Anderson. I think you know him from Sci-Fi Christian.
Hello.
Hello, Matthew.
Yeah. So here's the deal, man. I need to talk about this movie for our summer movie series. I went and saw it. I spent money on this movie. So, and yeah, I need to talk to some people about this.
I wanted to see it so much, and I wanted Daniel to be there so much that I had to bargain with him to get him there.
Okay.
He did. He bought me popcorn.
This is true. I said, if you go to this movie at this time, I will buy you a popcorn. And he said, deal.
I tried that with somebody once. It was Kobe Radcliffe. You guys might know him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to convince him to go see Pacific Rim. I was going to pay his ticket, and if he didn't like the movie, I would pay for his popcorn as well.
Funny thing.
No.
Kobe was there.
He said
there
no.
Too.
Kobe was there?
Yeah.
Did you have to bribe him?
No. He was on board because he's a good friend.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Just kidding, Daniel.
Awkward.
Awkward. Yeah.
Well, I thought you were saying that to me, like he's your good friend and not mine.
No, I was saying that to Daniel because Daniel made me pay him to.
Okay, so you were knocking down Daniel. Okay, I can accept that.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to talk about this movie too. This is good because on my podcast, we haven't talked about it. My other co-host hasn't seen it either. So this is perfect. Get Daniel here. We can all do this at one time.
Yeah, you know, we kind of did this with Oblivion where
that's right.
My guys weren't interested in seeing that. And okay, well, before we get started, though, I do need to get some business out of the way. All right. And that is that Strangers and Aliens is now part of the Christian Geek Central network. And that's at ChristianGeekCentral.com. We have a forum there. And there's all sorts of different blog articles and stuff over there. But, yeah, go check it out. It is a collection of blogs and podcasts working together to bring you best content on the web for Christian geeks. So that's ChristianGeekCentral.com. That is the business stuff out of the way.
I love it. Pater's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
Who started the whole network.
Okay, well, let's get started then. Let's talk about Elysium. The way this works, we will have a break in the middle where we will talk about things that are spoilers. But for the first part of this conversation, we are not spoiling this movie. And that is important, guys.
I won't.
All right? Because of the rules of the podcast. But I will say this right now, everyone who's listening. I want to spoil this movie. Just out of spite toward the movie.
Wow. Strong.
Yeah,
Why do I predict at some point that I'm going to tell Ben that he's not watching this movie right?
I hope you do tell me that, because if I'm watching this movie wrong, I would be more than welcome to have someone school me on how to watch this movie.
If I've learned anything, you watch about 50% of movies completely incorrect. So
because we disagree about 50% of movies. Is that what you're basing that on?
Could be right. Could be.
But so, listeners, I'm just going to tell you right now that we are going to play the spoiler music, and we are going to have a second half of the conversation where we do spoil it. But if you wanted to stick around and you haven't seen the movie, go right ahead. It's not going to hurt anything.
Hey, I don't want to delay our discussion, but speaking of music, I've been loving your summer movie music. Where did you get that music from?
I got it from a website that I got a free trial membership to for a week, and it was royalty-free music that you can just download and use.
It's perfect for the summer movies.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I had another friend who made fun of it and said that he was expecting Annette Funicelli to show up. It was a friend who would know about Annette Funicelli because he's like into Disney and stuff. But
it seems she's an appropriate Disney legend.
But anyway, no, I downloaded a whole bunch of music, not sure what I was going to use it for. And so every once in a while I dig into that archive, and that's where I got these two from. I also get music from J.S. Earls, who is a listener to both of our podcasts.
Yeah, and good guy.
He does some good music, too. But these are not from him. So
I'm excited to talk about the spoiler-free part, but I think I'm more excited to hear you guys debate during the spoiler-filled part.
Well, let's get started then, okay? The first thing we do on the Summer Movie Series is we actually kind of spoil our reviews a little bit by grading it up front, grading the movie. And so I'm interested in hearing what kind of grade you guys would give to Elysium, directed by Neil
Blomkamp,
yeah, and starring Matt Damon.
Best friends to the new
Batman.
This movie does not star Matt Damon.
And Jodie Foster.
No.
And yeah, the guy who played Holly Mad Murdock in the A-Team.
Okay.
Charlotte Copley.
What's his name?
Charlotte Copley,
yeah.
Why are you talking about supporting actors before the star, Mr. Copley?
You know, we can talk about that in a moment, but first let's grade it, okay? Grade it for me, one of you.
Daniel, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a solid A-.
What?
I love this movie.
I'm sorry. You really did shock me.
I haven't seen The Lone Ranger, but I know you're, like, in love with it, and you'd like to make out with it, and I know you've given it a super high grade, so I am confused as can be.
No.
Elysium, and the fact that you have not shown appropriate love to this Copley feature.
Okay, have you seen Lone Ranger?
No, not yet.
Okay, so you really don't have anything to compare it to there, but wow. That is extremely high, Daniel. I can't wait to find out from you why I'm wrong. Here.
Because it's fantastic.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm afraid to tell you that I liked it. I'm going to give it a solid B.
Come on, you love that movie. Give it an A.
Straight B.
Oh my goodness, you guys.
Hey,
wow.
I'll tell you the truth. I was wavering B+, but yeah, I'm going to go with B.
Oh my goodness, I am going with D+ or C-.
Yeah, that's quite low.
I'm still trying to figure that one out, but oh, wow.
I don't think anyone who would give an A to the Lone Ranger is allowed to give a grade to Elysium.
Okay, wow. I am happily surprised. This movie has given me some joy just out of being able to talk about it with you guys, and I'll tell you some other joy from my movie-going experience with this one. But wow, okay. So what were your expectations then when you went to go see this movie?
I had high expectations, actually, because liked District 9, which this is the director that did District 9.
Yes.
Love Matt Damon so much. Probably top three favorite actors for me. Yeah, I had pretty high expectations, but I didn't necessarily know exactly what the movie was going to be about. I realized once it started, I was not expecting this. So my expectations were based more on the people involved rather than story.
Okay. Daniel?
Well, and my expectations were based on the fact that I was very, very much surprised when I caught on Netflix one day District 9, because I saw that movie and I thought, oh, this is going to be a complete and utter joke. So I've been looking forward to Elysium without really knowing what the story was, because it was going to be the District 9 guy gets money. So yeah. I was hoping it would be a home run.
I was kind of expecting that as well. It was District 9 guy with lots of money and carte blanche too. I mean, he, from what I understand, I mean, they kept the plot a secret for a long time. And it sounds to me like the studio just said, here's your money, go make your movie. And that's part of where I'm looking at this and thinking, oh man, if you would just had some people rereading the script a couple times, you know, and solving my problems.
You know, but I'm going to be honest with you. You're probably right, because, you know, as I think through this movie, Kruger probably could have used more scenes.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Kruger being the
Copley
character, who's kind of the bad guy. And as far as bad guys go, he had some cool introductions and that kind of thing. And he's the breakout actor from District 9. He was the lead of District 9, and man, he kind of came out of nowhere, and just everybody loved him. He did a great job. I mean, if you like that movie, it's because you like him, because he's on the screen so much.
I have some thoughts on that character, but I think I'll wait more for the spoiler time.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the vague details then. What did you guys think of the story then? The story is kind of a Twilight Zone type of thing. It's a Star Trek type of thing. It's a definite metaphor for modern day ills and problems. And did the story engage you?
Yeah, I thought it was thought provoking. I mean, can we be specific about what it was speaking to, or do you want to save that for later in the show?
I think we can be specific about what it's speaking to. I mean, that's not a secret anymore. It was long time, but
do you think it was speaking more towards rich countries versus poor countries as a whole, or do you think specifically to United States and maybe Mexico? What were your thoughts on it?
I was thinking it was speaking to the United States healthcare system.
Yeah, I kind of felt like,
why are we talking about this speaking to the United States when it was written by someone who's not from the United States?
Yeah, maybe not necessarily. Well,
you can talk about it from an international point of view, though.
I mean, I'm willing
he's looking
to buy
at
Matt.
Our problems.
I'm willing to buy Matt saying a poor country versus a rich country.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that, let's be honest, this is an African who wrote this movie.
Okay.
And he's very familiar with this theme and differences as a white person living in South Africa, the differences in social economic stature between different groups.
Which is definitely a big part of what District 9 was about.
Yeah, I think he's writing from what he knows, because this is the atmosphere in which he lives.
I think what you're saying is definitely fair. I think I probably jumped to United States because that's where I'm from. So for me, if he's trying to speak to the audience, I kind of latched onto what I know. But yeah, I could see what you're saying. Maybe if it's just, you know, vague rich country versus vague poor country.
Set in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's about a white character, but he's living in a predominantly Hispanic area of I don't know if Los Angeles is a city anymore or if it's
it is
like
Los Angeles.
Is there any place that's not a city? Because there's overcrowding, serious overcrowding going on.
Well, they shot it in Mexico City, but said it was Los Angeles. It's interesting what you said. Matt Damon is one of only a couple white people that you see in that whole in any scenes in that town. What do you think? Why do you have any thoughts on that?
I have a friend who had a really cynical thought about it, which is basically Hollywood needs a white hero, and put a Hispanic person in front and center wouldn't be as appealing to the general movie-going audience. But I don't know if I don't know. I mean, Matt Damon is definitely the star, the draw.
Again, I think you guys are putting too much on what you think as an American here. Again, this is written and directed by somebody from South Africa, where there's a mixture of languages, cultures, and colors all around him. Now, yes, I think he's transplanting this to the United States because he's getting his money from the United States banks. But I really – I think that this is him writing about his world.
That might be so, but the language he uses – I'm not just talking about the English language.
It's not
I'm talking about the
– use Spanish. He uses French too.
I'm not talking about like literal language. I'm talking about the idioms that get used that are basically political shorthand in this movie. They're American specifically. I don't disagree that it's not about rich city or rich country, poor country, and social economical differences in that way. But I see this as there's healthcare problems, there's immigration issues, and the problem that I have with it is not that he's tackling these issues, is that it's so bad and so badly done.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah. So, Daniel, coming from my perspective where I'm in the United States, I saw a lot of border control themes in it. Is that, did you not see that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely something that's there. But I mean, he's a writer coming from a country where you see people moving across and borders are squishy because he lives in Africa. And I think it's an issue. It's probably an issue that lots of different places are facing. I mean, I just Googled South Africa immigration, and the fourth story is illegal immigrant campaign, like apartheid South Africa. I mean, again, I think we're not looking at the right context if we keep trying to nail things that are ripped from today's news.
Well, but let's say this, though. This is a success in a way, the same way a Twilight Zone episode might be a success, in that you can watch it from a different culture even and take away things that apply to your own culture. All right.
Yes,
you know,
I agree,
same with Star Trek.
I won't deny that we don't have an immigration discussion occurring here now.
And that's a discussion from the movie, too. Now, it may not be a discussion that he is specifically saying this applies to what you're saying and what your conversation is between your two parties or your two, political ideologies. But it definitely becomes a part of that discussion if you are watching this movie.
Yeah, and I'm just concerned. I mean, all the time we take again, this is a faith-based podcast. All the time we take scripture and quotes from Jesus and we attempt to put them into our context and to make them say what we want them to say. And I know that the Sci-Fi Christian, for example, has been a big proponent of let's try to understand the context. And I think we need to be careful to not just be pushing a message in Elysium that we may not necessarily understand the full context to.
Well, I think there's a very Christian message to Elysium as well.
Absolutely.
It just sucks getting there. So let's talk about special effects.
Yes. I thought...
Amazing! That's why I give it a C-.
So that's what put you over the edge?
Yeah, that's what gives it a passing grade.
Daniel?
I thought they were great.
Yeah. Everybody agrees. Great, yeah. Beautiful effects.
And again, like with Oblivion, I recommend seeing the special effects of this movie. Watch those special effects. They're really great.
Hey, Ben, you and I had a chance to talk about Oblivion. This is not necessarily part of the spoiler talk, but between these two movies? I feel like they're sort of equal in some sense. Which of these would you prefer?
I would watch Oblivion again just for the special effects, but also the framing and the kind of the beauty of it and the music. This is more gritty. And so, you know, the special effects fit that world and are, like I said, they're amazing. There's some really cool technology, sci-fi technology that's being used by the characters. There's references to 2001. There's references to, you know, different robot technologies that you see in a lot of modern film, like the new Star Trek movies and that kind of thing. But there's some really cool stuff going on there. And it's definitely a great follow-up visually to District 9.
Well, and I feel it's definitely, it looks and feels like District 9. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, I'm worried that Blomkamp is getting stylistically, visually into a rut. I don't want him to become the next M. Night Shyamalan as far as jokes.
This is only a second movie, though, so he has a little bit of time, I think, to really stake out, you know, some new directions and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Who knows? Maybe his style won't change.
I don't know. I'll be honest. I would love to see him direct a Marvel movie. I really would.
He just came out and said he would never do a Marvel movie.
See, that's disappointing to me. Because I think as we've talked about on Level 7, Welcome to Level 7, there's a lot of different styles, a lot of different voices when you look at the Marvel movies and the Avengers Initiative, and I think he could really add to what's there.
What's the context of that quote, Matt?
While you guys are talking, I'll look it back up.
Okay. I could see him doing a more gritty kind of crime, maybe a Daredevil type of thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You know, Hell's Kitchen with Daredevil and or Cloak and Dagger, possibly.
Yep.
But
so something that has multiple, you know, I could even see a Gambit, something that's got multiple cultures intersecting. I think he handles that well. The idea of different cultures and different languages. So, I mean, where you'd have a Gambit, you know, in a New Orleans where you could have somebody speaking Cajun, but also have somebody speaking, you know, regular English without an accent. That would be, and a gritty sort of feel mm-hmm. in areas of New Orleans. That would be cool. Of course, Marvel doesn't have rights to Gambit, but.
Right. Find it, Matt?
Yep. Here is what he says. This is my thought process. My thought process is, it's exactly what I was just saying. I just want to be an artist that's just left alone. That's really what I want. I want to make stuff that's just... Films are... And he kind of has a pause. Films are the only art form that require commerce so desperately. Any other artist needs a few dollars for a paintbrush. Really, if you think about it, like musicians or authors, they can be as free as they want. This is the only thing that just needs copious amounts of money. If you imagine a filmmaker trying to just be left alone as much as possible and make Star Wars, how does that work? Exactly. It kind of doesn't. But, and he kind of pauses. Now here's where he's, let me go down a little bit further. I think I might have actually taken out the part where he talks about Star Wars instead of Marvel. But I'll read on and see if I can find the specific Marvel quote.
Well, and it sounds like to me that he wants to do his own thing, and he doesn't necessarily want somebody like a Kevin Feige or a Kathleen Kennedy over his shoulder.
But editor second person to read a script and say, oh, you know what? There's some plot holes here. Oh, you know what? There's characters here who are doing things that don't make any sense based on what they've already done in the past.
It's like a broken record with you, isn't it?
It is like a broken record with me. I don't know what you're referring to, but I'm just saying there's some bad problems here with the script and story that could easily have been fixed to make this an A movie in my book. And instead, you know, I'm writing notes and I'm looking at my notes that I wrote down while I was in the film. And when I was on board with this movie, when, you know, at the beginning, the nun says to him, you're born for a destiny. And I'm seeing the science fiction exaggeration. I wrote down sci-fi exaggeration, and I'm with it. I wrote that down not because it was a bad thing, but because I'm thinking Twilight Zone. I'm thinking Star Trek. And then they have the quote-unquote undocumented ships flying through the air. And I'm just like, wait a minute, a little on the nose there. And then some things in the world just, there is, you can just see they're placing things in order to get from A to B to C, and not worrying about what the characters would that they have set up and created would actually do. And then you have these, I wrote down, over the top villain. Bad guys are stiff and white. And I don't mind having bad guys be white. In fact, as a white writer myself, I feel like I need to, I feel like as a white writer myself, that it's safer for me to make the bad guys be white, because then I'm casting negative, I'm casting a negative perspective on someone who is like me instead of someone who's not like me. You know, that's not a bad thing. It's just they're so stiff, and but then they don't move their necks, and they talk in these really weird accents that you just, it's like, oh, the fake villain accent. Jodie Foster, she's better than that. She was chewing up the scenery, spitting out her lines like an evil villain should, you know, in a cartoon. This is not a cartoon. This is gritty realism on film, and it then I started writing down, no subtlety, more coincidence, more caricature. I need to apologize to my wife and kids for wasting that money.
Oh, you wrote these notes while watching the movie?
Yeah. let's see.
See, here's the thing about
so much coincidence.
Goes to a movie theater where a couple that is either newly married or is having an affair goes to make out.
Okay,
so
wait.
I don't even think he sees the movie.
That was only one time.
No, it was twice. And I was sitting next to a married couple. All right. Now I'm watching the movie and I'm getting frustrated because I was on board with this. You know, Carlito. I'm getting names wrong.
Copley.
Terribly. What?
Copley?
Copley. Charlito, right? Charlito?
Yeah. Charlto. Yeah.
He comes on the screen and he's introduced, and I'm just like, the way they introduce this guy, I'm like, I know that's him. That's got to be him. And then you see him and he's just doing cool things. He has a sword and he's using it in ways that I'm thinking, wow, I hope his sword is has been cleaned.
He's got a t-shirt that says whole lot of awesome.
It just, he's a great character and introduced in an awesome way, and I'm going with it there. But then things, the coincidences start happening. Not just one to set things in motion, but lots of them to keep things in motion. And that's a problem for me, and I don't know if I'm watching the movie wrong.
But I'm confused. But, wait a minute. Let's back up a little bit. I need to take him to task here real quick.
But I think we can't really talk this out unless we're actually talking about this perspective.
No,
wait.
No,
wait.
I think I can do this.
No,
I,
I'm wait, gonna, wait, I'm wait, gonna, wait. Just
no,
one second,
no,
Daniel.
No, no, no. All right, go ahead.
So the movie starts losing me. I'm sitting next to this couple, and this lady sitting next to me, I think she was in tears in some moments in this movie. And she has her hand, you know, on her chest the way sometimes people do when they're really feeling, you know, emotional about something. And I hear her audibly saying, oh, you know, and she's into this movie. It has her emotionally. You get to the end, and I'll tell you in the spoiler part where this happened, but there's a point at the end where I just laughed out loud. I couldn't help myself. I saw this, and I thought, no, they did not just put that on the screen. And they did. And I stopped myself because I realized this lady next to me is really getting into it. And I just started laughing, and I'm like, oh, wait, no, I can't do that because, like, she'll think I'm laughing at her or something. Uh-oh. But then I had the giggles. I couldn't stop, like, because things kept happening there. I'm like, oh, no, they really are doing that. They really are going there.
Oh, you hated this movie. I know exactly what you're describing. Wait, and that's when you get to the point of you just hate them.
No, I'm done with him. Okay, let's back up to something else.
What?
I'm done with this. You're complaining about coincidences.
Yes.
And how this is all just too convenient.
Lots of coincidences, yes.
Let's back up here. I believe you were a little fan of a TV show called Heroes.
I was
a fan. That whole TV show is built on coincidences and that it's all, and conveniences.
I had problems with it there, too.
It's all connected.
Now, Lost, I didn't have problems with the coincidences in Lost because of what the island possibly was. Now, you didn't know what it was at the time.
Part of the show.
But coincidences were actually built into the structure of the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a movie, though. You're giving them the science fiction conceit. You're taking in this gritty realism. And then there's all these coincidences start happening that we can talk about in the spoiler section.
See, with me, it's the fact that they didn't go to some of the obvious questions that I had or some of the obvious outcomes that we could have gone to that made me actually appreciate the movie. And I was okay with the other coincidences. I mean, there is this little thing called, you know, purpose, destiny, someone other than us, maybe, you know, creating us in our wombs for something bigger than us. I don't know. Maybe that's why I can buy it, Ben.
Well, hey, before we get too far away, when I was previously quoting this article, I think I'm going to have to admit defeat and say I must have associated Star Wars and Disney together, and Marvel and Disney. Marvel and Disney, but I think the quote is actually Star Wars. But I think the idea still holds that he doesn't want to, or he wants to have creative freedom with what he works on. He wouldn't have as much in known properties.
I'll tell you right now, though, even when someone has creative freedom, a novelist works on a novel alone. But they are not – if they do not have another set of eyes working on it, it's not going to be as good. You need to have outside help. You need to have outside eyes coming in and saying, ah, here is – when someone is reading this book, they're going to have a problem here. When someone is watching this movie and so-and-so just happens to come back into someone's life – they're going to have problems with that. And then they're going to have problems with, well, again, that's for the spoiler filled section. But, we talked about style. We talked about themes. We haven't talked about acting. Well, I talked about Jodie Foster's acting a little bit.
Well, what you said about Jodie Foster, I actually had in my own notes. Totally true. The accent she was doing, it took me out of the movie just watching her.
I say shame on her. I do. Jodie Foster, you're better than this. Unless the director was telling you to play it as a cartoon villain, shame on you, Jodie Foster, for making that choice as an actor.
I would like to congratulate Jodie Foster, who I had lost all faith in after watching Contact.
I loved her in Contact.
Oh, it's brutal. It's just brutal.
I liked her in Contact. I liked her in
horrible.
Taxi Driver. I like her in Freaky Friday.
Yeah, now you're talking about things that she made when she was a teenager.
I know, but as a teenager, she was showing her acting genius. And I really do think she is one of the greats as far as film actors go. And this is where she just kind of said, you know what? Let's go for broke. And let's just play it like we're twirling our mustache, although I don't have one.
Hey, you know, Dr.
It'd be awesome if she did.
Dr. Jace often talks about the difference between bad acting and bad direction. What do you think it is here for Jodie Foster specifically?
I don't know. I can only imagine that it's direction. That's the only thing I can say to excuse what she's chosen to do here with this character. I don't know. I think Dr. Jace gives directors a little too much grief. I think he tends to give actors a little more slack because he is an actor himself. Now the flip side of that is as a writer, I tend to watch movies and watch them for what the writer was intending and give it a pass based on what it's intending sometimes. But then I watch something like this and I maybe am crawling too far on the side of, you know, writing is bad here. But
let's talk about something that we can all agree to when it comes to acting. Copley is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He gets a little too cartoony, I think.
Oh, I don't agree.
You don't?
He's my least favorite characters in the movie.
Wait, who are you not agreeing with?
Both. If you guys think that he was great, Copley is the guy I did not like in this movie. Kruger. I'm talking about Kruger here.
Yeah. No.
Matt.
He starts losing me toward the end of the movie, too. And this is a writing directing thing though, right here, Matt. I'll place this squarely at the feet of the writer director here. I'm trying to decide if I should quote the line. I think I'm going to anyway. I'm going to quote the line. No, it's too much of a spoiler. I can't quote the line. I'll quote it when we get to the spoiler section.
These last few questions so we can get to the spoilers.
How does it stand against other summer movies? Matt, go.
I thought it was much deeper. More of the things to think about, but not necessarily better. Just more thought-provoking.
What's better than this movie? Name one summer movie that's better than this.
Man of Steel.
And one that's worse than this.
Iron Man 3.
Yeah. Okay.
But I actually probably...
Why did I invite you guys on the show?
The weird thing is I'm more likely to watch Iron Man 3 because I just enjoy superhero films and Marvel specifically.
Yeah.
So I'd be more likely to want to watch Iron Man 3 again, whereas even though I think this was a better movie, it was weird. I didn't leave... I left the theater feeling like I don't need to see this again anytime soon.
Iron Man 3, though, has characters you're connected with.
Yeah, that's true.
And so watching that, you're watching characters and actors that you like and you enjoy. And with this movie, you're not connected to the characters in the same way because you didn't have four other movies with them.
Yeah.
So I can understand that you think that it's a worse movie, but you'd want to watch it before you'd watch this one. Daniel, how does this stand up for you?
It's my top two of the summer.
Are you serious?
Yep.
What's
I
one?
Do not know you.
Well, it could be Elysium.
What's number one or what's number two then?
Man of Steel.
Okay.
All right. So that puts everything underneath it. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, I put this in the bottom of my summer pile. I am not coming back to this movie. So
I'd say this is middle of the road. Middle of the summer road.
All right. Do you recommend seeing this movie then? And if you do, who do you recommend it to or who do you not recommend it to?
Daniel.
I recommend that every right-thinking person see this movie. Here, allow me to take a drink from the Elysium Kool-Aid here real quick.
Oh, man. Now, are you just...
like cherry.
Do you really think this or are you just reacting to me?
I really, really love this movie.
Okay, all right, all right.
I mean, here's the thing. You accuse me all the time of being infected by the people that I see movies with. And so I'm not going to let you infect me here, Ben Avery. I liked this movie. I enjoyed it. And you can't change my mind.
I did not say that all the time. I think I just said that about Iron Man 3.
Mm. Which I'm right about. But
which will – actually, by the time this podcast comes out, that podcast on Welcome to Level 7 will be out.
Different argument for a different day.
Yeah. All right, Matt.
Yeah.
Do you recommend it and who do you recommend it to?
I definitely recommend it. I feel like you should see it, especially if you like science fiction – especially if you like science fiction that speaks to current social issues. So just like you're saying, Twilight Zone, Star Trek, it's in the same vein. But who I wouldn't recommend it to, there are some pretty graphic, violent parts in it. And so if you hate graphic violence and you can't stand it and you would avoid movies because of it, then you probably wouldn't want to see this.
Okay. And I would say, I'm going to repeat something I think I said on Facebook here. Yeah, Rod Serling was doing this in the 50s more effectively. Gene Roddenberry was doing it in the 70s or in the 60s. 70s sci-fi before Star Wars was nailing this kind of movie. This movie is trying to be like a Logan's Run or like a Soylent Green, which aren't necessarily masterpieces of cinema, but they are, you know, masterpieces of agenda-driven science fiction. and this just doesn't stand the test against those kind of things. I recommend people see this movie because it's modern sci-fi. It's modern sci-fi that's trying to say something, and it is gorgeous. But I do not recommend spending a whole lot of money on this movie. I feel ripped off. I've never walked out of a theater where I considered what would they say if I went and asked for my money back because that movie was so bad.
Wow.
I am not joking.
It's not that bad, people.
Not even close. It's no Iron Man 3.
I totally disagree because there's no subtlety to the metaphor. It is on the head. It is a hammer on the head of a nail saying, here, undocumented spaceships, bam!
I think you're right that it is obvious, but it still got me thinking.
It's not just obvious, though. And
it still got me thinking about the issues. So, no, you should see it.
But here's the thing that I keep hearing, Matt, is he likes these shows – like the Twilight Zone and some of the episodes of Star Trek and probably some Outer Limits where you go through a whole story and they just make a switch on you. And they're like, boom, actually, this was based on today's headlines. Those were communists. He seems to like that sort of story where this story isn't. It's saying, here's a situation. We're going to put it into a different circumstance at a different time. We're letting you know what it is. Maybe you'll think about it a little bit.
No, because Ben, you can cloak this a little bit. You don't.
Why
I'm not
do
saying,
you need to cloak it?
I'm not saying you have to hide it. I'm saying create a world that is its own world, that has its own context. Don't call a spaceship that is invading an undocumented spaceship. What, they don't have the right docking codes, so it's undocumented? Who's documenting spaceships?
The robots.
They're documenting them? No, it's all on a hard drive. They're not undocumented spaceships. They might be unregistered. They might be...
Here's a question I had. Here they are. They've got this ship coming up, and they're calling it an undocumented spaceship. And they're talking about these codes. Who needs codes? Where's the air traffic controllers?
There aren't any. And that's the other thing is, it's not like there's even a defensive system there. And all I'm saying is they could have done things to make the situation work in the context of the world instead of trying so hard to say, hey, by the way, this equals this, and I'm going to put it right there for you so you can have it so obvious for you to see. All the coincidences and all the stuff we're going to talk about in the spoiler section.
Before we go to the spoiler section, this might be a question for a different day, but you said something that stuck with me. You were just talking about how in the 70s they were doing this well, or I guess you were saying pre-Star Wars. Were you insinuating that Star Wars may have possibly messed up some ways that science fiction is used?
I think Star Wars is both the best and worst thing that ever happened to science fiction.
So now this is an interesting topic. I don't want to cover it too much right now, but this is something Strangers and Aliens should come back to for sure.
I believe we did an episode along those lines. At some point we did. If we didn't do an episode with that topic,
I've listened to
every episode. Talked about,
was it called Ben's Nerd Rage?
This is not Nerd Rage, my friend.
I've probably heard almost every episode. I don't remember.
Okay, I'll look. And if we haven't done it, then we need to, because there are. I'm positive we did something about this, but maybe it was so long ago it wouldn't even matter.
Ooh, time loop! You need to start doing.
I'm not doing time loops. Time loop.
I'm just waiting for Matt to go from I've watched every episode to I've listened to every episode to I've listened to almost every episode to I've listened to some episodes to I've listened to an occasional episode.
No, I just remembered there are a couple I haven't heard yet because they are about things I haven't participated in yet, like Doctor Who or Flight of the Angels, still in the midst of those things. So hold them back a little.
Flight of the Angels, actually, I think you could listen to without... Because we try not to spoil it, because I wanted people to read that book.
I started reading the book.
Oh, it's a good book.
I just started reading it on my honeymoon, so here I go. We'll see how long it takes to finish.
I enjoyed that one.
I'm a slow reader, so. All right, let's do spoilers.
Yeah, we're going to switch over. I'm going to play the spoiler music right now. Okay, right now, we're going to spoil this movie. And I don't know. I don't know if we want to go just right down the list here. What did you enjoy? What did you not enjoy? What did you hate? That's more spoiler related. But what did you guys enjoy? And if there's anything you haven't talked about yet that you liked about this movie that's more spoilery.
I got one.
Okay.
Super Matt Damon. I loved the exoskeleton. I thought that was a cool feature. I like the fact that he knew his end was coming, so he really didn't have anything to lose by, like, drilling an entire exoskeleton into his skeletal system.
Let me ask you this. If you were going to try and download the contents of someone's brain into another someone, would you choose the guy who's going to die in a couple days to download all that important information?
I think I see what you're saying, but I think the fact was they couldn't find somebody else who was willing to take the risk, and he really had nothing to lose.
Well, they had other guys with him.
Risk.
There were other guys there.
But and yes, they died. But it's the guy with the stuff in his head that's the real target, and he's the one taking the risk because he could get his brain scrambled. The other guys can just get shot.
Yeah, I could see that part didn't bother me.
That bothered me, but what bothered me more was guess what, though? Just happens to be the one person who has the single most important information that he wouldn't normally have, except for they happen to have it on the right day, is also the one person who is not on Elysium. He's on Earth. It's a coincidence. I have a problem with that.
If that wasn't true, then this wouldn't be called Elysium. It would be called the bank job.
Well, and Matt Damon actually picked him out just because he didn't like him.
But he was the only one. Like, yeah, he picked him out because he didn't like him, because he's the guy who happened to be standing up there. So the guy who has to go into he's the guy who has to go to Earth. He's the guy who has to go into the place where it's just horrible. No one from Elysium wants to go there. But he's also the guy that she trusts the most. And I'm just, again, I'm kind of like, well, you know, there's just not.
Whoa. Trust.
Yeah.
She's not trusting him. She's forcing him to do something.
She's blackmailing him
into doing something for her.
There is a level of trust there. She is saying he will do this job. He'll get it done for me and not tell anyone.
She is putting him between a rock and a hard place and trying to terrify him.
Well, I think it's
give him bribes. No, there's no trust there.
Again, I'm looking at this guy. He is supposed to be the only guy who can reprogram the core of their computer, but he's also the guy that they're making go down to the planet. And I guess he's in charge of that business.
It's his company.
But if it's his company, why isn't he doesn't have anyone that he's sending down instead?
They make it quite clear that he doesn't trust anyone else to do it.
Wasn't quite clear enough for me.
He built this company.
He did. He did.
Yep.
I'm still shocked by someone who can sit through 23 episodes of season one of Heroes and have no problem with coincidences, finding all these coincidences here and thinking that they're a major issue. I can't deal with it.
They are an issue.
If we're skipping ahead and talking about things we don't like.
Yeah, sure.
Here's the thing that I didn't like the most. Matt Damon was not necessarily a sacrificial hero until his last moments of life. So when he's on his way up to Elysium towards the end of the movie, he's going just to trade the information for his own life. He turns down Spider's offer, but luckily Spider and his crew follow them up and sneak onto Elysium, and then Spider's there to save the dead. So I really think Spider is the hero of this, even though at the end Matt Damon does make a choice to sacrifice his life for the, you know, betterment of everybody. It would never even been a choice to make if Spider hadn't went ahead and, you know, taken the action he did.
Okay, well, here's Matt Damon, though.
See, if I was Ben Avery and I was talking about a different movie, I would tell you, Matt, that this is the character arc that we need, where we need to see significant growth from this narcissistic, self-centered person who's only thinking about himself to having all these situations affect him in such a way where he can finally make his sacrifice in the end.
Right.
Oh, sorry, Ben. Go ahead.
The little girl's story about the hippo and the monkey
was dumb.
Is his arc.
But that was...
She puts that seed in his head, and then at the end he says, oh, I understand about the hippo and why it did it, because I'm the hippo, and now I'm going to die.
But I don't even know at what point things changed for him. I think it was basically when, well, I have no chance anyways. I might as well let myself die in this process and help everybody else. There's not a moment where it's like, oh, here's where it turned for him. It just is.
Yeah, and it's not a huge character moment for him, but it definitely is the character arc that he has, where he is all self-absorbed. It's all about, can I survive? I want to survive, so I'm going to get up there and I'm going to heal myself.
Yeah, but wasn't he potentially mortally injured anyways? Like, as he's laying there, plugged into the machine, having to make the choice?
Right, right. The
button, he was probably going to die no matter what he did. So it's not necessarily a sacrifice. It would have been more sacrificial if he had a secret plan with Spider and they were working together, but he was truly turning his back on the entire world.
It does. The only thing that lends you to know it is a sacrificial thing in his mind, and that is where he says, tell her, I understand the hippo.
I know, but even as you're saying it like that...
No. He has a character transformation when he goes up to Elysium. He is set on saying, hey, I've got this in my head. I'm handing myself over if you will heal me. Now, there's nothing that says that they have to access that data and kill him. He can tell them straight out, this is what's in here. This is what this dude made. Just heal me, and it's, you know, it's, I'm off scot-free. And he's moved to the point where he's not giving himself up anymore and saying, hey, hey, just give me something and I'll give you my head. What's, you know, I'll keep what's inside my head in my head. He's moved on to, I am going to save us all.
No, no.
And he's moving on to seeing what he looks like. He's seeing, I think, a reflection of himself in Krueger.
Okay, wait. Think back to the movie. He tries to make that deal, and they hook him up to a machine, and just they're just going to extract it and kill him anyways. So he tries to make the deal to turn on everybody and not be a hero, but it doesn't work. And so then, well, I have nothing left. Okay, I'll be a hero.
He could have said – he could have found the president. I mean, it's Jodie Foster who caught him. He could have found the president and tried to make the same deal, and he doesn't.
How would he know where the president is? How would he know who the president is necessarily? I don't think you're stretching at this point, because he tried to be selfish. He only became a hero when there was no other choices.
And there was an element of, I'm doing this out of spite and out of revenge.
I honestly think Spider was the best character. He's my favorite character in the movie, because at first you don't necessarily like him. You're like, I don't know if I should trust this guy. And then he cares about the people as a whole. He risks his life and his friend's life to go up to Elysium. He is there in the moment that he's needed. He's proactive. Spider is the hero of this movie.
Yeah, there's something to that. As far as him being the hero of the movie, he's not the primary character.
He's not
the movie,
protagonist.
But, yeah,
but he's the hero.
Okay, so can we get this one thing out of the way here? All right. They are rewriting the core of the computer to allow everyone on Earth to have access to the health care that Elysium has, all right? And so what do? They backspace over population of the Earth, illegal, backspace over it, and then type the word legal, okay? This is the point in the movie where I laughed out loud, because this is where they're all legal now. What does that even mean? Okay.
I think it means they have the same rights and the same privileges. Like for medical, for example, they sent out the ships to go help everybody. So everybody gets the same treatment.
So their designation in the computer it's not citizenship.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
It's not what level of access do they have. Are they level 7? No, it's legal or illegal.
Okay.
And this is where, again, this is that political ideology or political buzzword, I should say, where it doesn't make sense in the context of the movie. It just makes sense in the context of, we are saying this thing about...
Hey, let me pull out my fine-tooth comb on this one.
No, jeez. This was a ridiculous, ridiculous moment in the movie. I laughed. I couldn't help it. And then...
They have to make the audience understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
No... They do. They make it very obvious. They're saying, hey, we're talking about legals and illegals. And
we watched a man's face get blown off and regrown.
Can we talk about the problem. Man's face? Yeah. Got blown off and regrown. I'm okay with his face being blown off and regrown if he's not brain dead. He's still alive.
Yeah, how did his brain not get damaged?
There might have been some damage, but he wasn't brain dead. And there was enough consciousness for him to stay alive. But they grow back his face, and the new facial tissue, the new skin tissue, still has the beard.
Yeah.
Where did that beard come from? Shouldn't it have been just fresh skin?
Fast-growing beard spray.
That's a good point.
These are things that are losing me. It would have looked ridiculous if they would have, shaved that part of his beard and just had that rounded off spot where there's nothing there. Maybe it would have looked ridiculous. I don't care, though.
No, see, the problem is it would have taken everyone out of the movie without the beard, because they'd been like, hey, it's Murdoch. I like Murdoch.
No, he would have still had part of the beard, because part of his face was still there that had that beard. And so you had this splotch of his mouth and chin and one cheek that wouldn't have had the beard there. But again, it was just one of those little things that just took me out.
I think that's a good point.
Let's see. Yeah. We're here. Facial reconstruction includes beard.
Let's talk about Krueger. So you guys loved him.
I got one more thing about him, but go ahead.
I don't like characters when they're evil, and you can't necessarily see where they're coming from, because good bad guys think they're the good guy, but I don't see that he thinks he's a good guy. He just wants to, what, be the most powerful? I didn't know what his motivation was. He just seemed bad for bad sake.
This is one thing that I wrote down toward the beginning of the movie, and they actually addressed it, and that was they're looking at what Matt Damon has in his head, and like, he's got the keys to the kingdom.
How do they know what it is, though?
I don't know, because that's just it. Because here's the other thing. Everyone's looking at this data.
And they all know what it is.
They all know what the data is. They all have access to look at the data on their own personal computers, but they haven't downloaded this. So, like, he's still got the only copy in his brain, but they're all looking at it. And I'm not sure how that's possible. And just by looking at it, they can say, oh, he's rewriting the code to make someone else president.
This guy's got a display on the back of his head. Like, he can use that?
They're not looking at the display on his head. Oh, the display on the head's not for him, though. I'm okay with that.
How does everybody know what it looks like? Like, how do they even know that the reboot key exists? And if they do know it exists, why is this the first time anybody's tried this?
Ben has already established with their programming code that you just use simple words. So in this case, if they all see on the screen, hit this button to reboot entire security system and make yourself president.
Yeah. This is the make yourself president code, too. But I'm thinking they have the keys to the kingdom. They're pretty bad dudes. Why are they not going to use this? Well, then they ended up trying to use that and take over. Here's the thing, though. Okay, Carlito, he couldn't lose his mustache because he had to twirl it. Kruger couldn't lose his mustache because he had to keep twirling it. This guy, he goes. He looks in the window and says to the woman that he's been antagonizing this whole time and threatening vaguely with kind of, you know, evil thoughts and stuff like that. I was going to heal your daughter and now I'm not going to. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, wait a minute. Where did that come from? He's going to throw in this, I was going to do it, but now I'm not going to. That's his threat. And it's just evil for evil's sake at that point.
Yeah. This is my point. I did not like Kruger. You guys both said earlier you did like him. So what do you like about him?
I loved him at the beginning where you see him and he's got this cloak on and you don't know what he's hiding. Well, he's hiding these, exoskeleton stuff that he has grafted onto his body. And he's hiding his sword that he uses to flip meat over on the grill. And all these kind of things. This is a cool introduction to a character. He's a bounty hunter. But then he turns halfway through the movie from a bounty hunter who's doing this to try and, you know, get his freedom back. And it turns into, I am just going to, you know, I'm so bad. I'm going to hit people in front of their children. Okay, let's go with that. But let's give him some motivation here. And I just it just wasn't there.
What were you going to say, Daniel?
I'm so lost at this point. I'm just glad that we could take the time here on Strangers and Aliens to talk about the ending of The Dark Knight Returns. I really think that this is the appropriate time for that.
Okay. At the end, Kruger puts on his own exoskeleton to match up with Matt Damon, which is...
It's even stronger than Matt Damon's.
Yeah, and it's sort of like the typical superhero movie ending where you face your equal yet opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so... How did you guys feel about that setup? Even though it sounds like the director wouldn't necessarily want to do superhero movies or maybe Star Wars movies, it did seem like a superhero movie finish.
There was a lot of caricature in this movie, and I don't know if that would extend to some of the tropes of sci-fi movies and some of the cliches of sci-fi movies. He kind of goes there, but I don't know.
Here's the thing. I think he's writing on model. But he's also not writing completely on model because, for example, he never tells us that Max is the little girl's father. I think we all kind of wondered, hey, is this dad?
No.
Is this his daughter?
No, it's not.
Well, but I mean, it's something out there. And the other thing is they could have found a happy ending for him where Max finds a way to get citizenship and survive the download, marries Frey and has a daughter. I mean, they avoided that too. They didn't give Max the happy ending.
No, but they definitely knew it's there. As soon as that child had leukemia, you knew he was taking her up to Elysium one way or another and he was going to get her healed. You knew it. And
this is a hot mess of an episode.
Oh, don't. This is my, no, not my other podcast. You are not going to use that phrase on my other podcast. Oh, my. I'm looking through my notes. Oh, Earth is overpopulated and living in squalor. Suddenly, everyone is going to become immortal. Or have really, really, really long lives. With no death, what happens next? That's an interesting question they don't talk about. And I don't know if they had room to talk about it in this movie, but it's something that no one was kind of thinking through.
Did we deal with that recently? Or I feel like that's a theme we've seen recently. Have you seen the movie End Time?
No.
Justin Timberlake, gotta see it. Not bad.
Oh, is that the one where he has a certain amount of time to live before the timer runs out?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that. Yeah, I mean, this is a movie idea, Elysium, that goes back to Metropolis. As far as having the elite who live above everyone else in peace and tranquility and health. And then you have the downtrodden poor living below the elite. And I do not have a problem with the politics of this movie. As far as like taking care and giving people health care that they need and making it available to them. I think that as Christians, we have a moral imperative to take care of people who do not have, and who live with, you know, and have needs that they can't provide for themselves. I think we have a moral imperative to feed the hungry and to, you know, help the sick and to visit the poor and the widowed and the orphans and that kind of thing.
Is that the Christian message that you kind of with?
Yeah, I mean, there is not that the movie has that Christian message. It's just that that is some of the questions that are brought up by the movie that as a Christian, you kind of have to say to yourself, okay, we should be, you know, as a Christian, could you as a Christian live in Elysium? Could you morally live in Elysium?
It's also interesting when you think about what Elysium is or where that word comes from. It's kind of from the Elysian Fields, which is the mm-hmm. Greek form of the afterlife, and I think it's thought of as sort of a paradise. And so, should Christians allow there to be that kind of exclusivity?
And that's where, you know, as a Christian, you'd almost have to say, well, if I was a Christian living in a home there that has that kind of a bed there, you'd almost need to go down to Earth and bring people up every once in a while, at the very least, to use your own bed.
Okay, so
and be jockeying for change politically.
If that's true, then how do we apply that to real life? What actions should we actually be taking?
Like I said, you know, like Jesus said, feeding the poor, helping the widowed and the orphaned, and you know, then now we're getting into politics. I don't necessarily want to get into politics as far as like Obamacare and all that kind of thing, because there are definitely conclusions you can draw from that.
What about people living in poorer settings? I'm just going to be totally honest. I don't know exactly how the immigration process works, but is there a way that we can help people who are living in poorer settings, poorer countries, come to America legally?
I don't know if that is the answer necessarily to bring them here.
Okay, I'm speaking from an American perspective. There's got to be places where people can go and get out of bad living situations, or is there a way we can improve the settings that they're living in? What are the options for us that we can actually, like, what actions can we really take now and not just think about or talk about?
Well, I mean, that depends on how deep you want to go, too. I mean, there's the whole idea of the compassion child, where you're helping one or two or however many kids, where you're supporting them to get an education, which is going to help them later on in life to be able to rise at least a little bit above their poverty.
I'm totally on board with compassion and world vision and global fingerprints and things like that. I've done that. I love those programs, but in some ways I feel like that's easy. Like that's the easy way.
It is the easy way. That's the low point.
You pay $32 a month or however much it is now. And, then we don't have to think about it, but what can we, this is something I've been really feeling a lot in real life, non-podcasting life, just that there's got to be something that I can actually do that's bigger than just sending money to a country.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's looking for organizations who are actually doing stuff. Now it depends too. Then are you saying, oh, well, we need to help people outside of our country, or, oh, we should help people in our country first. And, you know, you've got right in Minneapolis, Feed My Hungry Children, I think is what it's called.
Feed My Starving Children.
Feed My Starving Children. Yeah, I did a 2-page comic for them.
Really?
Yeah, one of my artists that I work with lives up in near Minneapolis, and we did a 2-page little comic to help give what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost like an advertisement kind of thing, just to show what kind of things they did and how they helped people. But there's a ministry right there that reaches out to the world.
Well, and I think part of it too is where is the calling for you at? Because to be honest, for some folks, the calling may be to give to a compassion child, where for other folks, the calling may be to go. And for other folks, it may be for you to do something at home. Because the thing is being one person, I don't think God calls us to solve all problems.
That's true. The movie did leave me thinking things aren't right in the real world as well. And if I feel emotionally invested in these movie characters' lives and wanting to see them get, you know, have equality, what action should I actually be taking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of the citizenship of the world versus the citizenship of just America or whatever. So, yeah, there we have it.
So, where do we go from here?
It seemed like there was one more thing. I can't find it in my notes. I'm looking through that question
here,
about
here,
death.
I'll just, hate it,
yeah,
awful, I'm
over
sinking,
the top,
hate it.
Too fast...
Wish I was watching Oblivion.
2 foot. Oh. Okay, explain this to me. Gregor has a sword that's at least 2 feet, possibly 3 feet long, right? He has a person on the ground in front of him and stabs the guy in the chest, and the sword goes all the way into the hilt, which means this thing went at least 12 inches into the soil, into the desert ground beneath. How did that work?
That didn't bother me.
It didn't make any sense.
Not a problem at all.
Why did it do that? Why could they just not have stopped it earlier?
It's adamantium. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what it is. It cuts through anything.
Yeah, but you still have to have the force to get through.
Dude, he's super strong. He's Kruger. He's awesome. Don't question Kruger.
Here's something interesting. We've been referring to almost all the characters by their actors' names.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting that I know that Matt Damon's Max something, but it's interesting that we're more thinking of them as the actor and not necessarily as the character they played.
That's because I had no connection to the characters.
And we're only calling him Kruger because we can't pronounce his real name.
That's it. All right. Wow. So I thought you guys were going to be more like, yeah, Ben, you're right. There's some problems with this movie.
When have I ever been that way?
Oh, my goodness. Daniel, yep. I don't know you anymore. I feel like I never knew you.
Ben, you usually ask, like, kind of where the movie franchise, if there is a franchise, could go from here. This
yes.
one's nowhere, right? This is a one and done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only thing they can do really is to show the effects of the world now that the healthcare is available to everyone to give them lives of 200 and 300 years. And that was the other thing that kind of bothered me about this kind of illogical world is they have this technology that allows you to heal people very, 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 very quickly. And it is not being used by the people in Elysium except on occasion. Why are these things not on Earth?
Overpopulation.
Is that it? Is that what we're talking about here? Is that the way to solve our overpopulation problem is to let the surplus population die?
Yeah, I think that's what they're doing.
Because now that situation is exactly what they have. And I found it interesting that it seemed like, and I might be wrong, but at the end of the movie, it seemed like the ships that came down were not coming down to take people up to Elysium.
No.
But were bringing the technology down to the people.
And they were all preloaded.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, why didn't they just do this a long time ago?
Because the people on Elysium are naughty.
And that's where, as you know, if you were a Christian living on Elysium, I don't think you could live with a healthy conscience without trying to change things politically and say, let's send some ships down there. We have this technology and apparently ready to go.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sitting in the dock.
Ready to go.
That's true.
So. Ready to go.
It sounds like Daniel's ready to go.
we talked more about this movie than I expected us to. So,
no, that, I mean, it's interesting how much we don't agree on it, but still, I think we all liked aspects of it, and Ben hated it.
It made for a more interesting conversation. I'll say that. I laughed out loud in the theater, and I never really done that. Just laughing
I hadn't done
at
that since
a
Star
movie.
Trek.
What?
I hadn't done that since Star Trek 2.
Oh, that is true. You mean Star Trek Into Darkness?
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, the Spock yell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a problem with that. I had a real problem with that. That was really unfortunate for that movie. But anyway, we already did that for Summer Movie Series. Hey, guys, tell me, how can people listen to you? Matt, let's start with you.
Yeah, well, I got a little podcast called The Sci-Fi Christian, which you can find at thescifichristian.com.
And there you can find people who almost agree with me on things. I am curious what other Ben would think about this movie, but I would never want him to spend money on this. I don't want people to Redbox this, people. Redbox it. Spend a dollar on it. Okay.
Daniel, where can I find you?
Well, you can find me on a big podcast called Welcome to Level 7 at welcometolevel7.com, where me and a co-host who's quite irrational break down the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But what if I want to hear you talk just about Disney stuff?
Oh, then you'd have to read me at betweendisney.com.
Oh, okay.
And you can always find me, well, you can find me at with Daniel over at Welcome to Level 7 as well. But you can find me at strangersandaliens.com. And if you want to tell me, like my guests told me, how wrong I am, you can go to strangersandaliens.com/contact, where we have a little thing you can, you know, put your name and your email in. You can also email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. Contact us on Twitter, where we are Strange and Alien. Or you can send us a voicemail by calling 1-804-37-ALIEN. 1-804-37-ALIEN. I'd love to hear what you have to think about this movie. And after our Riddick movie review, which, again, I don't know how I'm going to do it because nobody that I have been in contact with is even remotely interested in it. But after that, we'll probably do a summer roundup with Dr. Jason, Steve, and you can let us know what you thought about these movies this summer for that, possibly. So I would like to thank you for listening, and you guys have any parting words?
I really think that Elysium has opened the door for A-Team 2.
No, Guardians of the Galaxy is what's going to do that. Ooh, what if you had Kruger and Rocket Raccoon together?
Man. Don't make me melt with joy.
Matt, any final words for you?
You know how you guys do on Welcome to Level 7, a quote?
Mm-hmm.
Let me try to find a quote. Here's one from IMDb. Droids. There appears to be some type of wheeled vehicle with two occupants. They are armed, and I'd like them dead.
That's very insightful, and yeah. And all I have
that's
to say after that is Godspeed, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series. You can email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, leave a comment on the blog, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're also on Twitter, Strange and Alien. Check us out.
Wow, that's surprising. I didn't know there were only three. That's great news.
I'm sorry. I'm still fixated on Erin Gray.
Okay, quickly. Erin Gray. Here's our story, all right? We go to a convention, and this is the first convention I've ever been to in my life, except for a Star Trek convention in high school. I'm going as an adult. I'm married. I'm going with my married friend. And or actually, he's getting ready to get married, and his best man. And we go to Chicago Wizard World. And we're there. We're looking for stuff, you know. And I'm not really impressed with conventions as far as being an attendee. But I met Lou Ferrigno, talked to him a little bit, and complimented him about, you know, King of Queens. And he thanked me for that and said, yeah, we're having fun doing that. And he actually, like, instead of he talked to me, and I've heard horror stories about people who he just, like, gives them the cold shoulder or is kind of rude because we're not buying anything. Erin Gray, she's sitting there, and my friend goes up to her, and he sees that she has pictures there for sale, and he's like, oh, I can't buy one of those pictures. So he goes, and we find a vendor who's selling Buck Rogers trading cards. Now, Erin Gray played Wilma Deering on Buck Rogers in the late 70s, early 80s.
Oh, I know.
But does Matt know because he's so young?
I don't care.
I'm sorry.
It's all about me.
So he buys some trading cards, opens the pack, and there is, in his trading cards, a perfect shot of Erin Gray. Mm-hmm. And so we go back, and my friend goes up to Erin Gray and says, hi, I just wanted to let you know that I really had a big crush on you when I was a kid, and I was wondering if you could sign this card for me. And she says, yeah, sure, that'll be $20. And my friend's like, oh, and his face, like, it fell. It was the most heartbreaking thing you have ever seen. It just, he was crestfallen. He's just, oh. And she looks at him, and then, now there's no one in line for her right now. And she looks to the left, she looks to the right, you know, to see if the coast is clear. And she, I just hear her whispering, and I can still hear it to this day in my head. She says, for you, I'll make it 10.
Oh,
and he smiled at her, handed her a $10 bill, and she signed his Erin Gray, Wilma Deering, Buck Rogers trading card, and it made his day. So that's the Erin Gray story.
Erin's got to eat.
It's true.
That's so funny.
All right, let's see this.
We need to talk about Elysium. Okay, let's do it. okay, so I got my outline, and you guys have listened to the summer movie series?
Yeah, you calling me?
What?
Are you going to fake call me?
Yeah, because my other guys didn't see it. So I'm going to get you guys fake call on the line. I'll use the fake phone ringer. And I'll get Andrew. That's the friend who got the card signed. I'll get Matt first, and then I'll get you, Daniel, okay?
Okay.
Ready? All right. Welcome to Strangers and Aliens, a show where we talk about science.